SLP has done a lot of spinning and it's a cast. On this Great American Songbook audio edition, Will Freewald, jazz choice writer for The Village Voice, talks about the peak of Ella Fitzgerald's musical career, the Verve Years.
We were talking about the Verve Years, the years from 1955 to 1966, probably the peak of Ella Fitzgerald's career, and also a time period when jazz artists were still at the peak of the commercial end of the recording industry.
Well, that's certainly true. It's kind of the last period when something like a Cole Porter songbook could be a smash, sensational, big seller like that, or a George Gershwin songbook could be a major commercial release at that time. Because even a few years later, you find Fitzgerald doing things like Can't Buy Me Love and stuff like that, and covering country western songs on the Dean Martin Show and things. And it's, that was kind of, you know, the door was already beginning to close, but it hadn't affected the album market that much. It's still, the rock and roll was still just kind of a singles thing at that point, and the album market was still kind of unsullied by all of that.
Well, and the top 40 world at that time, even though it was dominated by rock and roll towards the end of that in 1966, you would still hear maybe a Frank Sinatra song, for example.
Oh, sure.
In being played, the formatting issue in radio was not the way it is today.
It was a lot more open then. It wasn't quite as cutthroat. I mean, it's the whole history of, that in the business has been, it's gotten increasingly cutthroat at every level, you know, up until now, you know. But, you know, I mean, things were tighter in 66 than they had been in 56, but it still was, you know, there still was ways for something like that to slip through, you know.
So what was there about Verve, other than the time period being just a good time period for her, that made that,
Norman Granz, who was Ella's manager at that time, and has been her manager from like 1949 or so until the end of her life, was completely devoted to making the best music that he could, and also to promoting his artists every way that he could. He was very strong in both areas, in terms of both a commercial concept and in terms of what you have to do to sell something, which isn't necessarily to make the most commercial kind of music. You know, that's not the only way to sell music. And he just had really good taste, and he also had really good business sense, and was able to, you know, establish Fitzgerald on that particular plateau as kind of a great artist, which isn't to say that her work before Grant's wasn't great. It's just that she, you know, thanks to Grant's, she was able to, you know, like I say, build this identity as an artist as opposed to just a regular pop singer. You know, I mean, from the Verve period on, she's sort of regarded as something apart, you know, a breed apart from, you know, Dinah Shore or someone like that, or Margaret Whiting, or just someone who was just regarded as a pop act.
That's right. I remember when I was just a lad in the 60s, and one of my teachers who taught me a lot about jazz, when he mentioned Ella Fitzgerald, he said his description was that you could tune your piano by her voice.
And
she was held in the highest esteem, and, you know, obviously a singer like Dinah Shore would have been considered, you know, just a lightweight, frankly. And so what do you think, what were the factors that set her apart? I mean, it was obviously her skill, and yet today there would be people who would point to some of her work, particularly the Decca work, and say it was pop music, which maybe is legitimate. What do you think about the distinction between Ella as a jazz artist and Ella as a pop artist, or is that just sophistry?
The amazing thing is that she definitely was a pop singer who happened to also be a great artist. And there's not necessarily always a vast distinction between them, but, you know, no matter what she did, she made it beautiful. And most of what she did for Decca was, in fact, beautiful. There's really only, I mean, there's some dog songs for Decca, and there's also some dog songs for Verve. I mean, there's a lot of really cheesy Verve singles out there too, things like Ringo Beat, which I think Ella wrote. But basically anything she did was art. I mean, her capacity was just, the way she did it and her approach and the results, you know, just automatically negated, you know, any other kind of consideration that there would be. I mean, she just had such innate musicianship.
Is it very clear our love is here to stay? Not for a year, but ever and a day. The radio and the telephone and the movies that we know may just be passing fancies, and in time may go.
brother, oh, oh, my dear, my love is here to stay. Together we're going a long, long way. In time the Rockies may crumble, Gibraltar may stumble, they're only made of clay.
You know, on one hand, we could compare her to other pop singers at the time. And on the other hand, if you compare her to other jazz singers, people like, say, Carmen McRae or Sarah Vaughan, I mean, as wonderful as they were, Ella had this whole kind of commercial appeal going for her, which was nothing to do with, you know, a direct attempt to sell records or to fill seats or just to be popular. It's just something that she had within it. Something that she had within her that she didn't really have to try to do. You know, there was nothing deliberate about it, just the way she was. But she had this whole commercial side that made her much more appealing, I think, to, you know, bigger numbers, to the mass audience, in a way that, you know, most of the ladies that we think of as the hardcore jazz singers, like Billie Holiday, for example, you know, she far surpassed them in that area. And she really, I mean, she really does compete with both. I mean, you know, she moved records and had popularity that, you know, would surpass most of the pop singers, and she had a capacity for jazz that really outstrips most of the jazz singers. I mean, she really is both things at the same time.